TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of useful consciousness. Plutonium fuel for nuclear reactors. Mary Olson with Jackie Cabasso. The program you are about to hear was recorded in January of 2002 in Contra Costa County, California. The World Watch Atlas lists the area as blighted zone, which means that it is contaminated beyond repair, and the zone lived up to its reputation. One of the refineries nearby released a cloud of sulfur dioxide, and we had been asked to stay indoors. We were waiting for the all clear in a comfortable living room in a private home we had been given for the day. It was the end of a historic meeting. The anti-nuclear activist Helen Caldicott had come from Australia to meet with anti-nuclear activists in the U.S. The question that concerned them all was how to organize and educate in the face of what Helen Caldicott calls the new nuclear danger, the U.S. administration's initiation of a new nuclear age. There had been talk about Star Wars, U.S. plans to build more nuclear reactors, and new weapons. The nine people in the room had assessed the consequences of these new nuclear projects and debated how to work together to set up an institute for public education. The toxic cloud outside that delayed our departure that evening kept our group together in informal talk. The foremost expert on nuclear reactors, Mary Olson, director of the Southeast Office of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, had come from Asheville, North Carolina. Jackie Cabasso, the foremost expert on nuclear weapons and executive director of the Western States Legal Foundation, had just begun a conversation with Mary to find out more about the U.S. administration's new MOX program. I asked Jackie if she would do this in the form of an interview and let me record it for you to hear today. She agreed. Soon after the two women began to talk, it became very quiet in the room. Members of the other anti-nuclear groups returned to their chairs or stood in the doorway to listen. What captured everybody's attention is the Bush administration's plan under the MOX, or Mixed Oxides Program, to fuel some of the country's aging nuclear reactors with the most dangerous substance on Earth, plutonium. Here is Jackie Cabasso's first question for Mary Olson.
There was a rather significant policy announcement from the Bush administration very recently, reversing a 20-year-old policy and deciding that the United States will now reprocess plutonium from nuclear weapons into fuel for nuclear reactors. It's called mixed oxide fuel. Could you tell us what this policy announcement means?
It's plutonium fuel for nuclear power reactors. Now, in the United States, there's 103 operating nuclear power reactors. Many people don't realize that. Most of them are east of the Mississippi River, but they're in 30 states. They are all currently using uranium fuel. Plutonium in this country has, as you say, for the last 20 years, been a highly controlled substance only for making nuclear bombs and doing research. This program would commercialize plutonium, make it a commodity, and put it into use in initially a limited number of nuclear power reactors, but perhaps once the kinks were ironed out, this fuel would go nationwide.
Okay, why don't we just back up a step and talk about nuclear fuel and nuclear reactors, just the real basics. Where does nuclear fuel, uranium fuel, come from, and how is it made into fuel for nuclear reactors? And what does it mean when fuel becomes spent?
Well, those are all good questions, but we have to start with that word spent. The only thing spent about anything nuclear is the money. There is nothing spent about what is properly called irradiated fuel, and that's the end point of your question. It's the fuel once it's been used by the reactor to generate electricity. And let's start with that point for just a moment. When atoms are split, out comes a tremendous amount of energy, part of which is converted almost immediately to heat. And the heat is siphoned off through the liquid coolant and turned into steam. And the steam is used to turn turbines that make the electricity. At the same time, it's generating massive amounts of new radioactivity. As you asked, where does this fuel come from? Well, uranium is an element that's in the Earth. It's mostly buried deep in the Earth because life itself doesn't need it, and so it's been, the soils have built up on top of it. It has not been in the cycles. Human beings go out and dig it up. It's processed in many steps. It is radioactive. It is a health hazard. The miners who dug up the uranium have suffered greatly in their health, particularly lung cancer, the communities that have been affected by mining, and then the various steps of processing, because uranium has to be very highly processed to make fuel for reactors through six separate steps, including turning it into a gas and concentrating a particular type of uranium, which is the same one that can be used for making nuclear bombs, but in a reactor situation, it's in lower concentration. So once this uranium is processed, it's turned into fuel rods, and those fuel rods are moved around the country to the 103 reactor sites, and they are radioactive, but I have to tell you, my dear sweet mother had the idea that somehow the radioactivity was used up when the electricity was made. And as I said a few moments ago, when the uranium is put into the reactor, the splitting of those uranium-235 atoms actually makes new radioactivity, and that fuel becomes millions of times more radioactive than the uranium that came out of the ground. In the course of about 3 years, they're trying to push that up longer, the fuel has to be taken out because it has become so full of what are called fission products, which are the cesium, the strontium, the radioactive iodines. All of these different radioactive elements get in the way of the fuel generating the heat that's needed, and so it's removed. And the industry now calls it spent fuel. And as I said, it's now very expensive stuff. It has to be safeguarded. It has to be kept from melting. The heat from radioactive decay that continues even after it's taken out of the reactor core is so great that the fuel itself will melt if it's not cooled for at least 5 years in liquid. And even after that, it will spontaneously combust. And so this fuel made from uranium is really very nasty stuff. And the other thing that we need to point out here is that when uranium is put into a reactor, plutonium is formed in the process of using the uranium fuel. Every single reactor on the planet that uses uranium fuel generates new plutonium. And so in the U.S., our reactors generate about 1% of the total weight of fuel by the time it's taken out is now plutonium. So indeed, the largest stock of plutonium in the world is in used reactor fuel or irradiated fuel. Now, I should stop. You should ask me another question, but I want to point out that in other parts of the world, that plutonium is harvested from reactor waste. We haven't been doing that in the United States. We've been simply storing the fuel as a waste.
Isn't it true that the United States has historically had a kind of firewall between commercial nuclear power and military nuclear technology for bombs? And what we're talking about now is actually using plutonium from dismantled nuclear weapons to burn as fuel in nuclear reactors. So could you talk a little bit about that historic separation and what you see as happening there?
Sure. I want to just capture the moment to say that the reactors were designed for uranium fuel. So one of the challenges we're facing is a complete experiment of going to plutonium fuel. As for where is this plutonium coming from and the shift in policy, I personally invoke the image that every time we talk about dismantling any nuclear weapon, even if it's just one nuclear weapon being taken apart, we should celebrate it. Nothing I'm about to say should undercut the fact that, yes, somebody decided to take some nuclear weapons apart. Now, sadly, it's not all nuclear weapons, and even more sadly, there's lots of evidence that new nuclear weapons are being made at the same time. Nonetheless, it raises the new question of what the hell do you do with the parts so that you can be sure that they don't become nuclear weapons again. And I'll tell you right now that that's what this whole program for plutonium fuel or MOX fuel is supposedly about. It's supposedly about making plutonium in the United States and in Russia from dismantled nuclear weapons, quote, safe. The sad thing is that not only is it making nuclear power even more unsafe, it's also becoming a very thin cover over a renewed nuclear weapons production program in the United States. So it's very difficult for me to give any credibility to the idea that this program is, in fact, making anything safe. But that's how it's being sold. Now, yes, there has supposedly been a great separation between the production of nuclear weapons and the production of nuclear energy, electricity. But I have to laugh at that, too. Westinghouse built the reactors for making electricity, and Westinghouse got the contracts to make the bombs. Where's the separation, I ask you? General Electric built the other competing reactors, the GE Mark I's and Mark II's, that are no better than Chernobyl, have no containment to speak of, undercut the Westinghouse model. And they also, for many, many years, were prime contractors on nuclear weapons. But in any case, there's been a supposed firewall. Now, what's changing, and truly is changing, is that in the past, nuclear power has enjoyed a lot of government support in its development, in formulating an insurance policy in case of major accidents called the Price-Anderson Act, in the waste, nationalizing the waste program. So there's been many supports for commercial nuclear power from the government, but the plutonium fuel program will give them a role in a national security mission, and they will receive not only their costs, but direct compensation for performing this function. And in an era of supposed competition between different sources of electrical energy, the reactors that use the plutonium fuel will be effectively underwritten with U.S. tax dollars, a check in the mail, first time ever, in order to keep the reactors able to outcompete any other form of energy so that they can continue to operate throughout the 20 years or however many years it takes to, quote unquote, dispose of the plutonium.
Can you just give a quick definition of the Price-Anderson Act?
The Price-Anderson Act was an amendment to the Atomic Energy Act because commercial nuclear reactors could not find private insurance for their operations. The insurance industry said, no, we will not insure you. And so the Congress stepped in and created a little funny thing, and I'm putting it that way because I find it very interesting. There's a pool of money that each reactor pays into every year that's about $100 million all told. If anything happens in the United States that costs more than $100 million, all of the reactor operators that are licensed at that time to produce nuclear energy have to pay equal shares. And they do so every year for 10 years, and the current formula results in about $9 billion that would be a collective payment by the industry towards the damages. Now, most reactor accidents would cost in the hundreds of billions of dollars because they're close to urban areas. If you wanted to calculate what would happen if jumbo jets hit the Indian Point reactors on the Hudson, very close to where the World Trade Center was hit, I think it would exceed the $200 billion figure that I've heard floated. There's three reactors at that site. They've got close to 35 years of collective fuel generation. The amount of radioactivity that would be floating around Manhattan, that place would be a ghost town right now. And the economic impact on this country would be far-reaching, greater than Enron by many orders of magnitude. So the point here is that the industry, they all pay to play. One screws up, they all pay, but then they stop at about $9 billion, which is a fraction of the cost, the true cost of a real Chernobyl-style event in the United States. Chernobyl dumped the entire reactor core and contaminated vast areas of Europe, and even in the United States there was fallout. So the point is that they have limited liability conferred upon them by law, And the result is that the victims would have to pay the rest. So ultimately, those who would pay are those who would suffer.
Now, I want to say one last thing about this. The plutonium doesn't go away. While the plutonium is in the reactor, some of it is split. It releases the energy that is the heat that makes the electric power, yes. But at the very same time, mixed oxide fuel is made of both plutonium and uranium. And the uranium in the fuel generates new plutonium at the same time. So while the plutonium that's put in is reduced, new plutonium is generated, and the net reduction is possibly 1%. So this is not a way to get rid of plutonium. It's only a way to make plutonium highly radioactive, which is part of the goal of supposedly making it safer, a way to give tax dollars to selected utilities that participate in a national security mission and prop them up against any competition they might have. And here comes the real kicker. Repurify plutonium to the point where it is so pure that weapons designers or nuclear fuel designers can use it.
Let me pick up on that last point, because I want to be clear that what we're talking about here is not the very radioactive plutonium that exists in the used up or the used fuel from commercial reactors. We're talking about plutonium that has been removed from nuclear weapons and is purified. And there's another one of these deceptive terms buried in here, which is this is so-called surplus plutonium, the plutonium from weapons that the United States has declared a surplus. At the same time, the United States is currently preserving 12,000 plutonium pits, cores from nuclear weapons in pristine condition in individual temperature-controlled igloos in Texas so that they can be reused in the future in new bombs. So that's another term that we need to be aware of. I wanted to ask you a fundamental question that perhaps we should have mentioned earlier, but what is it about plutonium that makes it so extraordinarily dangerous?
Well, I'm only going to take the question about plutonium danger specifically in terms of putting it in a reactor. I think I should give a nod, but I think you could also speak to this, that plutonium, you know, is so dangerous because people make bombs out of it. And from the place where they would make this plutonium fuel, MOX fuel, to the place where it would be used, which in the current program would be from the Augusta, Georgia area to the Charlotte, North Carolina area, so several hundred miles, in transit, that plutonium is still weapons usable. And if somebody were to divert a shipment, they would be able to take the plutonium back out of the fuel relatively easily with simple chemical procedures that are not hard, don't require a lot of money. And within 24 hours, some people estimate that they would have enough really pristine designer-grade weapons-usable plutonium for up to as many as 60 small nuclear bombs from one single shipment of the fuel. So that's one reason why it's so dangerous, because at the same time, this plutonium does not deliver lethal levels of radiation. It can be handled, unlike the irradiated fuel that comes out. That's why many organizations say plutonium is a waste and should be treated as a waste and is not a fuel source. And certainly the experiment of using plutonium in Europe has shown that it's not an economic fuel source. They are in debt in the plutonium industries, and they're failing in Europe. And indeed, that's part of why they're coming to the United States for our tax dollars to do this program to justify their expertise. But I want to go back to the question of why is it so dangerous and talk about it once it's in the reactor. Why is it so dangerous? Reactors are not safe. Uranium fuel is not safe. There has been two major accidents and a lot of lesser known accidents with uranium fuel in reactors. I'm speaking of Three Mile Island and Chernobyl. The work has been done. The calculations have been made. If Chernobyl had had plutonium fuel in the core, twice as many cancers would result. twice as many fatal cancers, twice as many non-fatal cancers. You infer, therefore, that all the other health effects that come from radiation would also be twice as bad. Why? Because not only is plutonium much more effective at causing cancer, it's also very toxic, and reactors that have plutonium fuel in them not only make additional plutonium, they make even heavier elements like americium and neptunium. You hardly ever hear about them, but believe it or not, they're worse than plutonium for causing cancer and for toxicity. And so the reactor core is fundamentally changed by introducing plutonium as a fuel. The consequences of a reactor accident are fundamentally worse, and there's every reason to believe that an accident is more likely with plutonium in the core. And it's for precisely the reason that plutonium-239 is selected for weapons production, is because it likes to go boom. And it's much harder to control than uranium. Uranium has a very interesting attribute, which is the hotter it gets inside the reactor, the harder it is to split a uranium-235 atom. It's a natural negative feedback loop that allows the reactor operators to have a little bit of grace in their ability to control a reactor core. Weapons-grade plutonium, exact reverse. The hotter it gets, the easier it is to split it. Second attribute of uranium that helps the reactor operators is when the atom is split, out comes that energy. Well, some of the energy is in the form of particles that are highly charged, called neutrons. Uranium happens to have two releases, an initial one that's immediate and a secondary one that is seconds to minutes later. Reactors are controlled with something called a control rod, many rods that are inserted. Well, they're mechanical mechanisms that require seconds and minutes for them to move. You cannot move a control rod in a nanosecond. It is not physically possible. Well, the weapons-grade plutonium they want to put into these reactors as fuel have only one-third as many delayed neutrons, the second burst that comes out later. So control rods are only one-third as effective when you're using plutonium fuel. So the engineers, you know, they love to solve all these problems, you know. But every time there's a new problem and a new solution, I believe, and many others believe, it cuts into what's called the margin of safety. And so we have a fuel that's much more dangerous in terms of the consequences. We have a fuel that's likely to cause an accident more readily. And we're paying for it with our tax dollars.
And I just want to talk a little bit more about why plutonium is so dangerous. As you mentioned, when plutonium is in a metal solid form, it can be handled. And the skin will actually serve as a barrier to radiation. But it's when it's in a particleized or finely divided form that it's pyrophoric. It spontaneously bursts into flame on contact with air. And under those circumstances, the tiniest particle, if inhaled or ingested or taken in through a cut in the skin, could very likely lead to a cancer and to other kinds of diseases. And in fact, the Department of Energy's studies on beagle dogs at the University of California, Davis, resulted in a bunch of dead dogs. They couldn't find a particle placed in the lung that was so small that it didn't cause a lung cancer. Every one of their experimental animals died, which is another small tragedy in the world of nuclear tragedies. I wanted to ask you to talk a little bit about the justification for this new approach, this new mixed oxide fuel program for the United States with respect to Russia in particular and to other countries internationally. In other words, as I understand it, this program, this idea was concocted in order to induce Russia to undertake a similar kind of a program. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, this whole Cold War arms race idea had the U.S. and Russia making nuclear weapons hand over fist. And so when they decided to change that stance and start dismantling some nuclear weapons, it's a bilateral agreement between the U.S. and Russia. And there are real concerns about the state of investment in security in Russia in terms of securing the nuclear materials from dismantled weapons. Many people have been deeply concerned about that. Our argument has been, why not help fund secure storage for these materials if that's the problem? The answer has been, oh, well, you can't trust them with the money. So why should we trust them with the money we would give them to make a MOX fuel factory? I don't get it. And any nuclear technology involves massive amounts of radiation, which is antithetical to life processes. And by that, I mean workers are exposed, workers become ill, workers have cancers, their children are affected genetically, if not directly through birth defects and childhood cancers. And it's like the Midas touch in reverse. Everything that is touched by this radioactive material either becomes activated or contaminated, and the waste just grows and grows and grows. So this illusion that there's this infinite energy source is accompanied by this infinite cloud of waste and destruction and illness.
That was Mary Olson. She's the expert on nuclear reactors with the North Carolina Office of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. She was interviewed by Jackie Cabasso, Executive Director of the Western States Legal Foundation. The conversation was recorded at a meeting called for by the Australian anti-nuclear activist Helen Caldicott in January 2002. Helen Caldicott is trying to set up an institute for public education on what she calls the new nuclear danger. Next week, you will hear about the specifics of dismantling nuclear warheads and the timeline for the MOX program that is poised to enter the permit phase for construction. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can find more information on the Mixed Oxides program on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get a copy or a printed transcript of the full 90-minute tape on plutonium for nuclear reactors for $12. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number 877-TUC-TAPE translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.